Another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day when we are still feeling the echoes of a confrontation of giants. Which giants? Shaquille O'Neal on one side and the Chinese Empire on the other. How's that going to go? Well, it's interesting. The NBA kicked off its games last night. And I can't believe the Clippers beat the Lakers by 10 points. And the Lakers with LeBron? Really? Well, maybe it's LeBron has been weakened. He's lost some of his magical powers because of his association with, it seems to me, the wrong and the silly side on this NBA China stuff, but not Shaquille O'Neal. One of the things that was very cool, and Rockstar Greg actually saw some of the game, and as you know, one of the things that makes sports fun to watch is they will show crowd reaction to different things, and they have a crowd cam, and there was a little kid at one point who was dancing with a team jersey. Do you know if it was for the Lakers, for the Clippers? It was for the Clippers, so that's why they won. So this little kid is dancing around with his Clippers jersey, holding it up, and then he all of a sudden says, people are pointing at him, they see that he's on camera, on international TV. And all of a sudden he puts down the Clippers shirt and he picks up another shirt that says, "Stand for freedom, stand with Hong Kong." And that's pretty cool. This is one of the reasons, because there are a bunch of people in the audience who are wearing those T-shirts. There were protesters out in front. There are people in the audience. And China said, we are not going to be broadcasting these opening games. And, you know, the one thing that it seems to me is encouraging with people like Shaquille O'Neal, we'll hear from him in just a moment, is that, look, the NBA is a very, very profitable company. It is. It's a great big giant corporation, and it makes a lot of money, and it delivers a good product, and a lot of people love it. But you know what? Is that corporation going to collapse if they don't expand into China, if they lose some of their Chinese fans? By the way, if China really tries to cut off the NBA, from what I understand, basketball is so popular in China that some of those ingenious Chinese engineering types, they'll find a way. They'll still be connected with the games. In any event, Shaquille O'Neal was on TNT last night while the first games of the season were going on. And here's what he said about Daryl Morey, who was the coach for the managing director for the San Antonio Spurs. Oh, Houston Rockets, of course. Houston Rockets with Yao Ming. Yeah, Popovich is a San Antonio Spurs, which is a different story entirely and a much worse story. But in any event, Shaquille O'Neal gave a little backup to Daryl Morey of the Houston Rockets. Listen.
We as American people, we do a lot of business in China, and they know and understand our values, and we understand their values. And one of our best values here in America is free speech. We're allowed to say what we want to say, and we're allowed to speak up about injustices, and that's just how it goes. And if people don't understand that, that's something that they have to deal with. But, you know, I just think thought it was unfortunate for, you know, both parties, and then you got people speaking when they don't know what they're talking about. But, you know, Daryl Morey was right. Whenever you see something wrong going on anywhere in the world, you should have the right to say, that's not right, and that's what he did. And but again, you know, when it comes to business, sometimes you have to tiptoe around things. But again, they understand our values, we understand our values, and here we have the right to speak, especially with the social media. We're going to say whatever we want to say when we want to say it.
Okay, good for Shaquille O'Neal. And it seems to me that this is an important point. And frankly, it's a chance for the NBA to become even more popular right here at home. and in other parts of the world. Because if you look around the world today, there is very widespread sympathy for what is going on in Hong Kong. And that's even true north of the border in Canada. Congratulations to Justin Trudeau, who got himself reelected, but his party, the Liberals, lost 33 seats. They don't have a majority. They only have a majority coming together with the Socialist National Democratic Party, the NDP. But they lost seats also. The only one of the major parties to gain seats, well, the Parti Québécois, the Quebec Separatist Party, that gained seats, and so did the Conservative Party, the Tories, under Andrew Scheer. And they're going to be in opposition against a minority government. And one hopes that they will be able to stand against the leftward lurch up in Canada. What I think is fascinating is, in terms of popular vote, the Conservatives actually won. They got 34.4%. The Libs got just below 33%. So you could say that in terms of popular vote, Andrew Scheer, the Conservative candidate, who I think will be continuing to lead the Tories because they did gain so well, that he is going to be a factor in Canada's future. And he says he will be back for more challenges against the floundering, flailing, and truly inept and embarrassing Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, now in a what will be a coalition government with probably with both the two smaller parties. But I think that should also be encouraging to people around the world. Because one of the things that you're seeing, and you see it in Israel, you see it in Britain, certainly at the moment, you see it in Canada, and yes, you see it in the United States, is very divided electorates. In any of those four countries, and by the way, I mentioned those four countries, Britain, Canada, and Israel are arguably America's closest three allies. And all are very sharply divided. And particularly on this Brexit issue, where who knows which way it's going to end up. And now they're saying that right now Boris Johnson would get a big advantage if they did call a new election. But here in the United States, we shouldn't think that our divisions, as toxic and depressing as they can be, are unique. It's this way around the world. So yesterday, in the impeachment hearings, there was very eventful testimony. Now, the testimony went on for 9 hours. And as I mentioned, it was William B. Taylor Jr., who is very much a straight arrow, from a truly outstanding military background, if you just read about this guy, and diplomatic background. He's won praise at every post he's ever held. And he's a stand-up guy. And I don't think he should be attacked for telling the truth, which I think kind of everybody assumes that he is. Or do you assume that William Taylor is lying? And if so, why? Here's the coverage of his testimony. And rather than playing you what Fox News had to say or what CNN had to say or MSNBC, will you buy the Wall Street Journal? Because the Wall Street Journal, which has been a big defender of President Trump, has said they are clearly against impeachment. They do not want to see the president impeached or removed from office. They have been pretty clear that they think the best thing for the country would be at the editorial board. Kimberly Strassel, who we just spoke to on this radio show. Kimberly Stassel's on the Wall Street Journal editorial board, and she's a very, very big supporter of the president and a very big critic of the way the Democrats are conducting this impeachment. But the Wall Street Journal writes, a top U.S. diplomat in Kyiv said President Trump made nearly $400 million in aid contingent on the Ukrainian president investigating Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden and alleged Ukrainian interference in the 2016 U.S. election. In prepared testimony that shed new light on the central question facing the impeachment inquiry, Bill Taylor, the acting U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, said Tuesday he grew concerned about dual channels through which the Trump administration was conducting foreign policy toward Kyiv, one through the State Department and the other involving Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal lawyer. And he became even more alarmed when the president in July directed aid to Ukraine to be put on hold. Mr. Taylor said he was later told that if Ukraine didn't declare it was opening the two investigations, Mr. Trump would neither release the aid nor agree to a White House meeting with Ukrainian president, with the Ukrainian president, according to his prepared testimony in the closed hearing. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who was elected in April, was required to announce two investigations into Burisma Group, a Ukrainian gas company where Mr. Biden's son Hunter was a board member, and into alleged Ukrainian meddling in the 2016 presidential election. Now, here's the interesting thing to me. This whole idea about Ukrainian meddling in the presidential election, okay, you have a Justice Department. This is what it's for. You have an FBI. The director of the FBI, Christopher Wray, is another stand-up guy appointed by President Trump, an excellent appointment to replace James Comey. Nobody thinks that Christopher Wray is somehow slanted against Trump. You're the president of the United States. What are you messing around with Rudy Giuliani for? Rudy Giuliani is as corrupt as they come. Look at the two guys, Parnas and Fruman, who are in jail right now on $1 million bond each, who channeled illicit money, foreign money, into the Trump campaign. They're Rudy's business partners. And I have not heard any explanation of why it is that President Trump didn't trust Attorney General William Barr and FBI Director Christopher Wray and his CIA Director Gina Haspel to investigate any Ukrainian messing around in the United States election of 2016. In other words, in Trump's conversation with Zelensky, if he had said, Bill Barr, my attorney general, is investigating this, I hope you'll give him full cooperation, no problem. But when he talks about Rudy Giuliani, and it's already been publicized and virtually publicly announced and acknowledged by Giuliani that the purpose of his investigation was to discredit Joe Biden, who, by the way, is soaring in the polls. The most recent poll shows Joe Biden actually went up since September. Yeah, but between now and the end of September, Biden gained 15 points. Why do you think that is? Now, this is among Democrats who are likely to vote on the Democratic side. Doesn't mean that he's going to beat Trump, but it means that all of the attention and the desire to try to smear Joe Biden and his son, and yes, his son has agreed to take a paternity test for some woman in Arkansas who claims he fathered her child. And yes, there is a Democratic congresswoman who I've particularly dislike and have since she was elected, just recently elected, Katie Hill, who's 32, who, Greg, you mentioned something about this yesterday, did you? Yeah. Okay, Katie Hill, it turns out, she went through a divorce this year. But before she did, she and her ex-husband, she is one of the two publicly advertised bisexuals in the Democratic caucus. Well, one is a U.S. senator now, Kristen Sinema. And then there's Katie Hill, and she, according to multiple reports, even posted photographs somewhere, which people have sent along, about involvement with a very young aide, 22-year-old aide. It is not legal for congressional members to be involved with staff. You can't do that. Can't do it. Because the power position of even a freshman member of Congress is just too great. Now, the allegation is that she had this young member of the staff who was female involved in a steamy relationship with her and her husband. Yeah, there. I'd never heard the term before, but yes, they called it a thruple. That's thruple. More details than that I can't give you. It's a family show. But, okay, see, this kind of stuff, okay, you're a journalist, you can find it. But for the president of the United States to say, I want you to work with Rudy Giuliani, who's looking for stuff on Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, and I want you to talk to him, saying that to the president of a foreign power, and saying it right after he has asked for Javelin missiles to stand against Soviet tanks. I know they're not Soviet tanks. They're Russian tanks. The Soviet Union, thank God, is dead. But it's outrageous. President of Ukraine says, we need those Javelins. 13,000 Ukrainians have given their lives defending their country against this Russian onslaught. 13,000. It's more than the United States lost in Iraq and Afghanistan combined in a country that is one-eighth the size of the United States in population. It's a serious matter. And again, why would the president want to have Zelensky speak to Rudy Giuliani? And one of the interesting parts in the testimony that was prepared yesterday by William Taylor is he said that President Trump, he had spoken to Ambassador Gordon Sondland, who was his superior, or he was put in charge of Ukraine. He was the hotelier who had given $1 million to the Trump inauguration and been put in place as our ambassador to the EU. And talking about his conversation with Mr. Sondland, he said that President Trump wanted President Zelensky in a public box by making a public statement about ordering such investigations. Ambassador Sondland tried to explain to me that President Trump is a businessman. When a businessman is about to sign a check to someone who owes him something, he said, the businessman asks that person to pay up before signing the check. Or he asks that person to pay up and then doesn't write a check, as apparently was the case for President Trump and some of his business dealings. Look, all of this is going to require some kind of answer other than calling people human scum, other than talking about lynchings. Now, look, the Democrats are terrible hypocrites because they use the term lynching, and Joe Biden used the term lynching to talk about the Clinton impeachment. It's ridiculous to do that. A lynching is a lynching. But if people are following legal processes and fairly carefully, does it really count as a lynching? We will get to that dispute and to the dispute with a father of a 7-year-old. Being forced to stand by while his son is, in effect, castrated. It's a terrible story. We will get to that. A miscarriage of justice coming up on the Medved Show. On the Michael Medved Show, we We are in the midst of a political battle royal, but it's about more than politics. And maybe even part of it has to do with or gets involved with the issue of religious faith. It's one of the things I've been writing about. I talked about it a little bit on Friday. There's a big new Pew research study that's just, it's very depressing for those of us who would like to see America maintain our religious heritage. And when I say maintain our religious heritage, America's always been a far more religiously devout country than other Western nations. And yes, I know. Poland is a seriously Catholic nation, and there are other nations in Eastern Europe where there is fervent religiosity. But if you go around Western Europe, France, Britain, Netherlands, Germany, all of these great religious traditions produce churches that are empty, just empty, deserted. And yes, I know there are a couple of big new mega churches, non-affiliated Bible churches that have grown up in places like Seoul, South Korea, which has some of the largest churches in the world. In London, there are a number that appeal to, by the way, some of the recent immigrants to London who are attending those churches. But still, when you talk about things like church attendance, in America, we're still a country where 40% of Americans go to church or synagogue at least once a month, and about a third go every week. And yes, we had great holiday attendance at our synagogue on Monday and Tuesday. And it's one of those things where the political involvement or lack of involvement with religious faith is gathering considerable attention, and it should. The problem, I think, for Republicans is not a problem appealing to religious believers. The religious segment of the United States, and this does not necessarily apply to African Americans, who, by the way, are as a group, very religious in terms of church attendance and what people believe in. African Americans should be Republican. But for a complex of reasons, they're not. But Frank Bruni, who's a big liberal, writes a very good and I think courageous piece in the New York Times today. And he headlines the piece, "The Democratic Primary's God Deficit." And he starts out, "The most recent Democratic debate lasted 3 hours, and according to one transcript I checked, it exceeded 30,000 words." 30,000 words, it's a lot of words there. And it was just too bad that Tom Steyer dominated the debate the way he did. Remember him? He said, "Of those 30,000 words, almost none of them were about religion. God came up only in throwaway phrases. 'God bless Kamala,' said Cory Booker, praising Kamala Harris for discussing reproductive rights. Joe Biden scattered 'for God's sake' and 'God forbid' like croutons on his word salads." And they were word salads with some of the ingredients didn't fit at all. Tulsi Gabbard, explaining the meaning of the word aloha, noted that we're all God's children. When Booker fleetingly mentioned his participation in a bipartisan Bible study group, and he does go regularly, I know he does, Frank Bruni writes, "I snapped to attention. That was the closest the debate came to acknowledging the importance of faith in many people's lives. While the percentage of Americans who don't identify with any religion has grown significantly over the past decade to 26% from 17%, according to a sweeping survey by the Pew Research Center," it's the one we talked about on Friday, "it's still the case that more than half of Americans say that they pray daily." That's in person, not going to church, but doing personal prayers. 45% attend religious services at least once a month. But you wouldn't know it to tune into the Democratic primary. It's not necessary to talk about religion, but it's not smart to avoid it. That's what he's arguing. He writes, President Trump is poised to paint Democrats as unhinged lefties, not only in terms of health care and taxes, but also in terms of cultural issues, including abortion and LGBTQ rights. You know why he's poised to do that? Because they are unhinged lefties on those issues. And Frank Bruni writes, some Democratic presidential candidates are already playing into his hands. Beto O'Rourke, who is not going to be president, by the way, recently seemed to call for religious groups that don't support marriage equality, in other words, homosexual marriage, to lose their tax-exempt status, an outlier position that the president immediately seized on and railed against. And he's right to do that. O'Rourke's aides later insisted that he was misunderstood. Yeah, poor misunderstood teenager. That might not matter in the bluest of the bluest states, said Mike McCurry, a Democratic consultant who served as the White House press secretary under President Bill Clinton. But he added, I sure as hell believe that it would work in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And that's what it's all going to come down to. In other words, the crucial states, the swing states, and by the way, including states like Arizona. And if the Democrats do make a big play for Texas, like they're planning to, which would absolutely assure their victory if they had any chance of carrying Texas. And part of the reason, I mean, in Texas, the Speaker of the Texas House of Representatives just resigned with a scandal. And it's going to be not the easiest year for Republicans in the Lone Star State. The church-state divide shouldn't dissuade the candidates, McCurry said. That's such a misreading of what the political DNA of America is, he said. We have had religion woven into our political structures and our political debate from the very beginning. Besides, he added, a Democrat who speaks persuasively about religion has a potentially huge tactical advantage. Think ahead to the general election. If you're talking about faith in an authentic, genuine way, imagine the contrast if you're running against Donald Trump, who has absolutely none of that vocabulary. While the president may have the farthest reaches of the religious right locked down, many Americans of faith are appalled by him. Some. In the Democratic debates, Elizabeth Warren, a Methodist, has repeatedly reflected on her past as a teacher. But she never took the few extra syllables to note that where she was a teacher was Sunday school. Yeah, it was. In terms of connecting with as much of the electorate as possible, that's a mistake. And in terms of the president's moral fluency, it's a blown opportunity. The only candidate among the Democrats, leading candidates, who says he attends religious services regularly is Mayor Pete. And he attends an Episcopal church together with his husband, Chasten. Here's the problem. Right now, I think Frank Bruni is right. I think it's appropriate that we talk about some of these individual liberty, conscience, religious liberty issues in politics. But if we bring politics into church, I think that's one of the reasons church attendance is declining and affiliation is declining and more young people are disillusioned with religious faith. We will get to that. We'll also get to the back and forth among Republicans and Democrats on the whole impeachment proceedings. That and more coming up on the Medved Show. Today, the closed-door hearings of the House Intelligence Committee, which is one of the three committees that's assigned to pursue the impeachment investigation. The other committees are the Banking Committee, which is run by Maxine Waters. And she's busy today trying to interrogate She's trying to interrogate Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook. And she doesn't like Facebook at all and wants to bust it up, which is so fascinating to see Mark Zuckerberg, who is no conservative, sort of standing up for maybe conservative ideas that it's okay to make a profit by giving people something they want. But the other committee that was assigned to investigate President Trump for impeachment, I believe, was there's the House Judiciary Committee, which is already well underway. That's with Jerry Nadler. But there was also the Reform and Oversight Committee, where the chairman just died. That was Elijah Cummings' committee. Now it's Sean Patrick Maloney who has taken over that committee. And meanwhile, they're all converging together. They're all going to come up with their reasons for impeachment. The House is going to vote. And then we'll see what comes next. But part of what happened yesterday was that there was testimony which, according to every nonpartisan or vaguely open-minded observer, was credible and was deeply damaging to the president. And it was testimony from lifelong Republican, conservative public servant, highly decorated military officer, 101st Airborne, and Bill Taylor. Okay, so the response to Bill Taylor from Kevin McCarthy, he spoke about the testimony, ran 9 hours yesterday with a questioning by Republicans, and he spoke particularly about one brief segment where he said that John Ratliff, a congressman from Texas, that John Ratliff had just destroyed Taylor's credibility. Listen.
In 90 seconds, we had John Ratliff destroy Taylor's whole argument. We can't really talk about it, but what we're finding is just his questioning in 90 seconds refuted everything of what Adam Schiff believes out there. There is no quid pro quo. And the one thing that you find out in this process is all this information, it's just like that whistleblower. Remember, we haven't seen that whistleblower anywhere. Everything's second, third, and fourth hand information.
Okay, the second, third, and fourth hand information, it doesn't go so well when you're talking about people who actually had the conversations. They were party to those conversations. And Taylor made contemporaneous notes. He was a good diplomat. He was making notes at the time, and he produced those notes. And I think it's tough to disregard him. But Devin Nunes on Fox News, the vice chair or the ranking Republican on the House Intelligence Committee, working with Adam Schiff. How lucky for him. I think Adam Schiff is a tough customer. And Devin Nunes repeated the same story with a slightly different twist. Listen.
Well, I was down there most of the day in this meeting with Ambassador Taylor. And once again, it was the same thing. Something leaks out to the Washington Post. Narratives are built. But the truth is that in 2 minutes, John Ratcliffe destroyed this witness. There's no quid pro quo. In addition, it continues to be alarming to me, the lack of the understanding at the State Department by the bureaucracy there about how much the Ukrainians were involved opposing Donald Trump as a candidate. So, you know, just the not understanding that the Democrats had paid Christopher Steele for the dossier, which he got information, according to Nelly Orr, from Ukrainians. This is really frightening that people in the State Department wouldn't have a clue, wouldn't understand why would the president send Rudy Giuliani to Ukraine? Well, perhaps because they dirtied him up. And it would be his lawyer's responsibility to get over there to Ukraine, figure out what the dirt is, to try to defend his client, which then was the president of the United States, going up against the Mueller witch hunt.
Okay, if the Mueller witch hunt, so-called, was sanctioned by President Trump's own appointee, Rod Rosenstein, in the Department of Justice, and under the attorney general at the time, whose name was Jeff Sessions, And now President Trump has different people at the Justice Department who he selected to replace Jeff Sessions, who he didn't like, who he spent a full year bashing and bashing and bashing. But now he has Bill Barr. So why, if you want to find out some of these deep state rumors about the Democratic National Committee server and the various reports on that, why not have the Justice Department do an investigation? Oh, guess what? They're doing an investigation. It's a big deal. Bill Barr is personally involved, and John Durham, the U.S. attorney in Connecticut, is doing an investigation. There's also an investigation going on by the Inspector General for the Justice Department, Michael Horowitz, who's supposed to be turning in that information sometime soon. So what do you need Giuliani for? It makes no sense at all. Stephen Lynch, who is a congressman Democrat from Massachusetts. Of course, there are no Republicans in Massachusetts other than the governor, most popular governor in the country, Charlie Baker, the Republican governor of Massachusetts. Stephen Lynch, who serves the 8th Congressional District, was on CNN, and he said this.
Well, you know, it was clearly a violation of the House rules. Because we have 435 members of Congress, everybody can't be in on every meeting, right? Especially a deposition in a room that holds maybe, you know, 25 to, you know, 40 seats at any one time. So it obviously was a measure that was exercised by my Republican colleagues to disrupt the hearing. And it was in violation of the House rules. The House rules give jurisdiction to certain committees, mine included, to conduct oversight. So members that don't have that responsibility came in and wanted to, you know, exercise a right that doesn't exist by coming into the deposition. It's clear that the Republicans don't want to hear the truth. They don't want this testimony to go on. After yesterday, they don't want any part of testimony. They can't dispute the substance of the testimony. So they're attacking process here.
Okay, he's talking about Bill Taylor's testimony yesterday and then the disruption of the proceedings today. There's also the ongoing lynching debate. Now you might think, what? Who thinks lynching is good? Nobody thinks lynching is good. Lynching is awful. It's a horrible, horrible crime. It's murder. It's often racially tinged murder in American history. But President Trump basically started this last round of the lynching controversy by saying he was a victim of lynching. How did he say it? He said it in a tweet. He tweeted, "All Republicans must remember what they are witnessing here, a lynching, but we will win." And win, of course, in capitals. And, of course, all kinds of Democrats jumped all over him and said this is racist and it somehow trivializes the suffering of so many African-Americans who were lynched. Lindsey Graham had this response.
I think that's pretty well accurate. This is a sham. This is a joke. I'm going to let the whole world know that if we were doing this to a Democratic president, you would be all over me right now. Not one person has asked me a question. What do you think about the fact that President Trump doesn't know who his accuser is? What do you think about the fact that the Republican minority cannot call witnesses, that everything's done behind closed doors? I can only imagine if this were a Democratic president, what you would be saying to me right now. So it shows a lot of things about our national media.
Okay, and then it does turn out that the term lynching was used by Joe Biden and Jerry Nadler and Gregory Meeks, another Democrat, when it talked about the Bill Clinton impeachment back then in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.